It's the Leonard Lopate Show on WNYC. I'm Richard Hake in for Leonard today. On Sunday, Syrian government forces began a violent crackdown in the city of Hama, which has become a center of rebellion over the 5 months of protests. Yesterday, the UN Security Council issued a statement condemning the violence in Syria. Joining me now for a look at the impact that the government crackdown is having is Blake Hounshell, managing editor of Foreign Policy Magazine. I'm pleased to welcome him back to the Leonard Lopate Show for today's backstory segment. Blake, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
The crackdown started on Sunday, and it's been centered in this one town, which has become kind of this, you know, the center of this rebellion. Have there crackdowns been in other parts of the country?
It looks like it's really a countrywide crackdown. Hama is probably the most dramatic example of where the government has gone in with tanks and basically shooting civilians in their homes, in the streets. But there are also cities like Deir ez-Zor out on the Euphrates River to the east, where there's been a similar kind of crackdown, if not the same level of deaths and destruction. What I think the Syrian regime is trying to do is shut this thing down before it grows any larger. There was always a concern by the Syrian government that Ramadan would see mass protests because people go to the mosques every night, so they'd be able to go to the mosques and then gather and take to the streets. So they're trying to put this thing down by force, and it may be working temporarily in Hama, but I think it will come back to bite them in the long run.
How many protesters have been out in the streets in Hama?
Well, you know, it's impossible to tell because the Syrian government doesn't let any reporters do their jobs freely. There are very few Western reporters that have gone into the country at all. Some of them have gone in and actually snuck in. But when they have been able to, you know, get a good estimate of the crowd size, there have maybe been 500,000 people in the main city square in Hama, and then large crowds in other cities. But we're looking at these things through almost like a pinhole lens. We see, you know, videos uploaded to YouTube and activists saying, you know, they make claims about the size of the crowd, and it's impossible for us as journalists to verify it. Now, of course, the Syrian government says that these people are all just terrorists and armed gangs, and that's not very credible, but it appears they're trying to scare their own population into supporting this crackdown.
You're on the phone with us from Doha, and you mentioned that foreign journalists are not allowed in Syria. They haven't been for months. Is basically social media the way that we are getting the reports from Hama and from other parts of Syria?
Well, you know, Syrian activists have for months been able to smuggle satellite phones into the country. And so, you know, there are pockets of organized activists who do have these sat phones, and they cull videos from people's cell phones, and they upload them with their satellite phones, or they smuggle them to the border in Lebanon, where they upload it to the internet from there. But that's the main way that people like me can know what's going on. We can call people in these cities, you know, it's hard to verify any of the information we get because we're not there seeing it with our own eyes.
There's a very graphic video being shown on Syrian state television that's set to show protesters dumping the bodies of soldiers into a river that's near that town of Hama. Protesters are disputing the video. I actually saw it. I could barely watch it. Is public opinion split between the protesters and the government?
Well, I think there's definitely, you know, the government does have supporters. There are people who don't like the protests, and they worry about the stability of the country. They worry about what's going to happen if these people take over. Now, some of that is, you know, religious fears. Some of it is people that are close to the ruling system. But the government is, you know, using these kinds of examples to paint all of the protesters as violent and armed. And, you know, that's just not the case. The vast majority of these protests have been peaceful. And whenever there have been what looked to be verified incidents of violence by protesters, the other protesters have denounced them and said this is not the way we want to do things, because they know there's no way to overthrow this government by force. The government's got the tanks and the planes. and the bomb. So they feel like peaceful protests are the way to go.
There's been video of government tanks rolling through Hama, as you mentioned, along with reports of shelling and sniper fire. Is this specific crackdown particularly heavy-handed than others?
Well, you know, it's certainly a lot more bloody than what we saw in Tunisia and Egypt. This is a government that, remember, in 1982 in Hama, the same city, killed at least 10,000 people. The government in that time shelled buildings and bulldozed them to the ground and paved them over. There are parts of Hama where buildings are built on top of what people say are mass graves. So this is an incredibly brutal regime that's not willing to brook any dissent or any threat to its power. Libya, probably, even bloodier a scenario. Some estimates I've seen as many as 20,000 people may have died. But that revolution turned violent very quickly. This has been mostly the government shooting at unarmed demonstrators.
Do you think that the earlier massacre that you mentioned is one of the reasons that Hama has become kind of this center of protest now?
Well, it's interesting because there were those kinds of crackdowns in several other cities in Syria at the time. Aleppo was at one point out of control of the hands of the government in the 1980s, and the government went in similarly. They didn't kill as many people. But Hama and Aleppo have reacted differently this time around. I think Hama, there are people whose, parents and uncles died in the last round of violence who see this as their chance to peacefully get their revenge. There are people in Aleppo who are afraid of what might happen, and that's why that city, I think, has been a lot quieter.
We're speaking with Blake Hounshell. He's the managing editor of Foreign Policy magazine on developments in Syria. Blake, has the Syrian president, Bashar al-Assad, said anything about this most recent crackdown?
Well, what he actually did was he visited the hospital the other day and congratulated the soldiers for what he said was confronting these armed gangs. From all that we can tell, these are people who are just shooting at innocent civilians, but he continues to paint it as an armed uprising. One thing that the Syrian government did today was that Bashar al-Assad issued a presidential decree allowing multi-party elections for the first time. But I think it's a bit late for that, and it's probably not going to calm things on the streets.
Now, didn't he promise, I think it was back in June or July, to stop arresting people without judicial process? Wasn't that a while ago?
He made a lot of promises. At one point, they released a lot of people from prison, a lot of political prisoners. They've made, various vague promises of reforms, both economic and political reforms. But then they haven't delivered on most of them, and people are looking for, real action, like stopping killing protesters. And they're not going to be satisfied by these kind of half-hearted political gestures.
Are we seeing something like a cycle of crackdowns from the government on the protesters in different parts of Syria?
Yeah, well, what the activists say is that the army and the security services are stretched thin. They're kind of running from town to town. A lot of these demonstrations happen at odd hours, like during the night, purposely so that they hire out these members of the security services. There are reports that some of the most loyal divisions, like the 4th Division, which is controlled by Bashar's brother, Maher, that they're the ones who are doing, most of the heavy lifting. So I think the thinking by the activists is that they will tire out the army before the reverse.
Now, estimates of how many people have died since the beginning of the protests 5 months ago range from 1,600 to 4,000. Do those numbers make the country the most deadly since the beginning of the Arab Spring?
Well, I would still think Libya is probably the most deadly, but Syria is catching up very quickly. Keep in mind that there's still maybe 3,000 people that have totally disappeared and gone off the grid, nobody knows where they are. Some percentage of them will probably wind up dead, or we might never know what happened to them. So, you know, a lot of people are worried that the death toll could ultimately be much higher. And of course, you know, Ramadan's not over yet. Crackdown is still going on. And, you know, things are likely to get bloodier before they get more peaceful.
And yesterday, the United Nations Security Council issued a statement condemning the violent crackdown. Is this the first time that the Security Council actually moved to condemn Syria?
This is the... There's been a resolution in the works for months. And Russia primarily, but a few other countries on the Security Council, have blocked any action on it. And so this is sort of the next best thing, a presidential statement, not binding in any way, but really an expression of the will of the Security Council saying, look, this is unacceptable. This needs to stop. It's symbolic, but it also sends a powerful message to Bashar al-Assad and his friends that they're not going to get away with this forever. And that if he keeps it up, there will be sterner actions to come.
Yeah, it was Russia and China, both permanent members of the Security Council, who were said to block that security response, the Security Council response. Has there been any indication of what made them stand aside this week and let the statement be issued?
Well, I think probably the obvious explanation is that it just got too bloody for them to stomach. And that they were isolated diplomatically. They didn't want to be seen as the ones, you know, standing in the way of condemning a massacre. There have been some statements by Russian officials recently that were a lot stronger than they were in the past. But, you know, keep in mind, Russia is still an ally of the Syrian government. They've got a naval base in Tartus. And, you know, the Syrian tanks that are being used on the streets, those are Russian tanks. The Syrian military is equipped with, you know, Russian armament. So I doubt the Russians would really let any sort of international intervention like we saw in Libya happen to its ally Syria, even though nobody's really talking about that yet.
Now, Lebanon happens to be one of the non-permanent members of the Security Council. They avoided signing onto the statement as well. Is that a sign that the of continued strength of the relationship between Syria and Lebanon?
Well, you know, it seems pretty clear that Lebanon is not a completely independent country. It's still very much under the thumb of Syria. The government of Lebanon is controlled mainly by Hezbollah, which is the Shiite militant group that is financed by Iran and armed by Syria as well. And Hezbollah has spoken out in defense of the Assad regime and has, you know, basically carried water for the Syrian government. So nobody expected the Lebanese government to stick its neck out. But having said that, they did allow this presidential statement to be issued, which is I think a step forward. Even though they issued a statement afterwards denying that they believed in it.
The American ambassador to Syria, Robert Ford, spoke before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee yesterday. He said it was time to start thinking about the day after President Assad is out of office. Do you think, finally, is that likely to be anytime soon?
I mean, it's impossible to tell. This thing could drag on for months. Remember, people thought Muammar Gaddafi was going to go down within weeks of the NATO intervention, and he's still, you know, thumbing his nose at the international community. This is a very deeply rooted regime, and it's a sectarian regime that's, you know, backed by the Alawite minority group and other minority groups that fear that a Sunni majority takeover of the country would be bad for them, if not deadly. So there are a lot of people that are going to probably fight this thing to the end, unless by some miracle there's some kind of negotiated solution. And the army's got all the weapons, and it'll be months probably before we see the regime really start to crack.
Okay, I've been speaking with Blake Hounshell, managing editor of Foreign Policy, about the government crackdown on protesters in Syria. Thanks a lot for joining us, Blake.
Thank you.